Welcome to Theatre Voice, the V&A's archive of conversations with leading theatre practitioners. I'm Tim Bano, editor of Theatre Voice. Today's interview is with Dominic Hill, artistic director of the Citizens Theatre in Glasgow. The CIT, as it's known, began life as a working theatre in 1878 and has been a cornerstone not just of Scottish theatre but the whole of the UK, with its groundbreaking work spanning new writing and reinvented classics, as well as its community spirit. It's a hugely loved institution in the Gorbals and the surrounding areas. In 2018, however, the theatre shut its doors for a huge multi-million pound redevelopment project. And very soon, it's about to reopen with a show called Small Acts of Love by Francis Poet, featuring music by Deacon Blues' Ricky Ross about the aftermath of the Lockerbie bombing in 1988. Dominic talks to critic Fergus Morgan about that show, the stresses and strains of the redevelopment, and what we can expect from the CIT when it opens its doors again. Here is Fergus Morgan talking to Dominic Hill.
Dominic, hello. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, Fergus. Thank you.
Very exciting time for you. The Citizens Theatre in Glasgow is set to reopen after 7 years, is it, in September?
Yeah.
You must be feeling pretty happy about that.
Yes, 7 years. It's been a long slog, but yeah, it's great to finally see the light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah, we reopen first. Public performance is on the 9th of September, so that feels like it's galloping towards us. So, yeah, it's incredibly exciting and a little bit scary, I'd say.
I was lucky enough to get a tour of the refurbished Citizens Theatre. Now, I'd not actually been to the previous Citizens Theatre, but I'd heard horror stories about how inaccessible and dark and intimidating it was. I was blown away by what the refurbishment has achieved. It's absolutely spectacular, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, on those sort of darker days where things don't seem to be going right, when I go back and I do a tour of the theatre and I show people around like yourself and the kind of excitement that is generated by that. And, you know, I see myself, what a sort of magnificent building it now is and is going to be, then yeah, it all feels worth it. So I think everyone has done a really tremendous job, and I think it's going to be a kind of incredible asset, really, for generations to come. Certainly, that's the hope.
Describe the refurbishment for me, which I'm sure you've done 1,000 times, but it is extraordinary. You've kind of wrapped the old auditorium in this entirely new structure.
Yeah, that's exactly it, really. So there is a beautiful late Victorian theatre at the heart of the organisation. And over the years, other buildings have been added to it. And it was a kind of charming higgledy-piggledy mess, completely inaccessible to anybody with any kind of mobility issues. Rain was coming in. I remember watching a Christmas show before we closed, and literally it was raining on stage from the holes in the roof. Sewage used to come up regularly underneath the stage. We were constantly having to pump out dirty water from under the stage. So although the old building had a lot of, you know, everyone's kind of loved it and loved its charm and loved its kind of craziness, it had to change, really. So we've basically, yes, we've removed most of the buildings around the original theatre. We've exposed the walls of the original theatre, which I think is what looks so stunning, and created a new foyer, new studios, new participation spaces, and upgraded everything else, really. So it's a kind of been a monumental task, certainly more than just, I guess, the word refurb perhaps would indicate. I mean,
it's a rebuilding. It's taken longer and it's cost more than it was scheduled to do, but these projects tend to in the current climate. But it is going to be a kind of theatre making factory, isn't it, with these workshops attached, with these studios, and making not just shows for the CIT stage but for other companies and everything.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think I've always loved the fact that in the old days we used to be able to do everything on site. Rehearsals, wardrobe making, scenery making. It was all the whole kind of from beginning to end of the process was in one place, which not every theatre is able to do. And it felt important to be able to keep that identity going, but also to be able to keep those kind of skills and that kind of creativity going, as you say, not just for us but for the whole industry, and in a way not just for theatre but for opera, TV, film, you know, it all feeds into each other. So yeah, we built new workshops to accommodate all that activity, new rehearsal rooms. It feels like a really kind of major kind of creating place, and that's really exciting.
You've announced the first shows that you'll be reopening with, the first being Small Acts of Love, and you play with songs by Francis Poet and Ricky Ross of Deacon Blue, which is, well, you tell me what it's about.
I suppose it's sort of posing the question, what do you do with grief and trauma after an event as catastrophic as the Lockerbie bombing? And it tells the true story of how both the people on the ground in Lockerbie who were forced to confront that event on that night, and also the families of many of the victims of the bombing, kind of came together and forged these sort of extraordinary friendships, love affairs, relationships over the years, and how, in a way, that helped kind of fill a vacuum, really, in terms of that sense of grieving, and in that sense of sort of how do you deal with these kind of catastrophes from from the smallest things, from the women's laundry, where many of the women of Lockerbie collected clothing, books, belongings of people who had died. They washed them, they ironed them, they found out who they belonged to, and they sent them back over to America. And then consequently, many of those families decided to come back over and meet those people who'd done that work, find out how and where their loved ones died, and again forge these kind of extraordinary friendships which are going on today. So the piece sort of celebrates that we do go to the dark place of the night, but we don't linger there too long. And mainly it's about what grew from that night. Ricky has done some wonderful songs that help create the mood and the feeling and the atmosphere and the emotion of the piece. And Francis has interviewed, so everything in the piece has come from interviews that Francis has done with those people who were affected by that night or their families, and woven this sort of tapestry of words and song and stories from it.
You're going to be directing it. You've programmed it. It sounds like a very moving show about an extremely tragic event. Why did it feel like the right show to reopen the sits with?
Well, it was always kind of going to be impossible to find the totally right show to open the Sits with. And that's partly to do, I think, because the Sits is very eclectic in terms of its audience and in terms of the work that we do. I guess it felt so. We started making this show during COVID, during those years. And it felt like a reopening with a show that was about community and about trying to heal and about coming together felt like a right way of reopening. It's also large scale. It's got 14 people. It's got a band. So it's like opening with a major piece of work, but also something that feels kind of important and thoughtful and relevant.
I'm really looking forward to it. Also announced, you've got a revival of The Glass Menagerie done in co-production with Dundee Rep. You've got Douglas Maxwell's play So Young, which we first saw at the Edinburgh Fringe at the Travis Theatre last year. You've got your Christmas show, Beauty and the Beast. You've got a whole load of other events around the opening. Is this what the Sits is going to look like going forward? Is this kind of a typical season that we can expect with kind of a revival of a classic play, a new play, and some family stuff as well?
Yes, I think so. It's always sort of slightly strange, the reopening, because there's a lot of work. There's a lot of work that we have commissioned and been developing while we've closed. For example, So Young was commissioned for the new theatre, but we wanted to get it on, which is why we took it to the Travis last year. The Christmas show, that's wanted to create something brand new for the Sits for Christmas. So I think there is a specific leaning this year, perhaps towards new work, new Glasgow stories, which is not typical for us. And I think it's great that we are always celebrating new writing and new writers. That feels very important. Coming up, you probably will see more classic titles, which is sort of what we're known for, I guess.
Of course, the Sits was run for decades by the triumvirate of Charles Havergal, Philip Prowse, and Robert David Macdonald, who did that were renowned for staging their kind of radical adaptations of European classics.
And I think we have continue that we continue that tradition, I think, before we close. So I think there probably will be perhaps more classics than in that first season, but also, you know, contemporary classics are important, big modern new plays. We've got one of those coming up in the spring season. But I think that, yeah, that balance between classic stories, new plays, and Glasgow stories feels to be the sort of the right territory for us to be in. But also it's a kind of big learning experience, I think, for us the first year, maybe the first couple of years. We don't, you know, we've been closed for so long that in some ways we don't quite know what to expect. And I think the audience will teach us what they want the theatre to be and how they want it to be, and we need to respond to that. I think also we'll have a new studio, and that makes a hopefully will make a big impact on the organisation and how it f is and how it feels. And there are opportunities there for other people to come into the building and use the building and show off their work, and then hopefully that will impact what happens on the main stage. So I feel very much like the opening is the beginning of something that will evolve, and I'm not quite sure how that evolution will work, but I'm excited to see.
Thrilled as well. I'm so excited. I've moved to Scotland in 2019, and the Sits has never been open since I've never seen a Sits show in the Sits Theatre. And from speaking to people involved in Scottish theatre, it's been hugely missed over the last 7 years. Do you think that's true?
I do think it's true, yeah. I think we filled a very particular role, certainly in Glasgow. There's no shortage of theatres in Glasgow. You know, you've got the two big ATG houses and you've got the Tron. But what you don't have is the sort of mid-scale classic producing venue, which is what we were offering. So there's something, one of the things that's so special, I think, about the Sits is that it's there is an intimacy to it. It's a great place for plays, you know, for drama, but also that intimacy allows us to do a variety of work. So we've done, you know, Beckett, we've done Crap's Last Table on that stage, you know, one man shows, and also we've done big things like the Oresteia. So that it's very special, I think, in being able to kind of accommodate that size of work, and that's been missing, I think, while we've been closed.
You have staged other shows elsewhere while you've been closed at the Sits. You did some stuff at Regent's Park Open Air Theatre. You've done some stuff for A Play, A Pie and a Pint, also in Glasgow. So you haven't forgotten how to direct shows yourself. But
I hope
how
not.
keen are you to get stuck into the business of wrestling with shows and putting them on your own stage?
I'm really excited about that. And in fact, you know, yesterday I was in showing somebody around the theatre, and we went into the rehearsal room, and the rehearsal room has a brand new floor and some new windows, and it looks very kind of spick and span. And it was really exciting to think, oh, wow, kind of in a few weeks' time we're going to be in here making a piece of work. And yeah. I have really missed that. I missed that room, and I've missed that. I kind of feel like it's sort of that is my primary job, really. And so, although we have done it sporadically, there's something very special about a rehearsal room and a group of people and that kind of focus that you get when everybody is really kind of working together to create something. And we've sort of been a bit nomadic in the last few years, and for a while we had a funny little pokey rehearsal room in an old primary school, and you know we've had to sort of move around and adapt. So it feels really good to go back to what feels like home, really.
I've seen some of the stuff you've done since the Sits has been closed, but I don't feel like I've ever seen a show that is a Dominic Hill show.
Yeah.
What would that be? What does that look like? If you had to kind of define yourself as a director, how would you do that?
I do like to work at scale. I like making large pieces of work. I like classic texts, and I like collaborating with other people in order to make something which hopefully is kind of an exciting event for audiences. And I guess I've always liked the idea that theatre should be an event, should be something that is kind of visceral and affecting and moving. So I think when I look back and think about the work that I'm proudest of, it's often in collaboration with a composer or composers, with movement directors, with great designers, and I think all that coming together to create something kind of visceral feels to me what I kind of aim to do as a director. And I think I kind of, although I like spectacle and I like design, and I think a lot of my work has been dictated by the sits itself, by that stage, which I think is an incredibly warm and creative space. And there's been a kind of tradition, I think, of theatre making at the sits, which on the whole has come out of not having much money, where the theatre space itself is part of the kind of experience. And I've always thought with the sits, compared to any other theatre I've worked in, that you can put a chair in the middle of that empty space and light it beautifully, and something comes alive in a way that's different from if it was at the Travis or at Dundee Rep. There is a sort of real kind of, I don't want to sound too pretentious about it, but there's a kind of holiness, I think, about that space, which is to do with they knew how to make theatres, they knew about spaces when they created theatres at that time. And it's also about history. I think it's something to do about the history of the sits, feels like it slightly haunts what you do there. All those extraordinary performances and people that have been in that place. And there's a sort of I said magic, that's the word I'm looking for. There's a kind of magic, I think, to the space as a sort of creative space, which I think can be inspiring. And I think that on the whole, the work that we've done there, that I've done there, has been quite pared back in terms of, I love exposing the theatre walls, I love exposing the machinery of making theatre. I love live music, so nearly all my shows have live music in them. Working with movement directors is really important to me to create these sort of shows that are, yeah, an amalgam of all those sort of different disciplines. But I guess at the heart of it is also that I'm a great fan of text and of the words. So I feel I'm quite rigorous in terms of actually mining text and intention and action, but also then melding it with kind of theatricality and a kind of sense of scale and spectacle as well.
Asking you to do a bit more introspection, where do you think that sensibility comes from? Can you pinpoint the shows that you saw early on, or the directors you worked with early on, or the buildings you worked in that really informed that approach?
I moved to London in the 90s, and the people whose work was inspiring me there were people like Nancy Meckler at Shared Experience, Complicité, Annie Cassaldine, Helena Kauthausen, Deborah Warner, all great, interestingly, women directors. And yeah, and I suppose that sense of particularly investigating classic texts, but with all these other kind of with an immense sense of theatricality, I guess is the work that really got me very excited, I think, in the 90s. It's seeing a lot of that work in London. Robert Lepage was sort of relatively new then, and his work, particularly his early work, kind of really blew my mind. And then I think the big thing that changed when I went to Dundee,
You moved to
which
Scotland in
was
2003. That's what it says on your Wikipedia, at any rate.
Is it? Did I? I couldn't work out whether it was 2002 or 2003. Anyway, certainly, yeah, around about then. That was really brilliant for me because there was something about being at Dundee Rep where it felt like you could do anything. Well, first of all, we had a company. So we had 14 people. We had a company of 14, and that was extraordinary
So you were under
because
Hamish Glenn at that point when you first
originally I
moved.
was there as an associate under Hamish for a year, and then Hamish left, and then James and I became artistic directors. But we kept the company, which he had founded in 2000. So having a company of actors was, yeah, I was kind of life changing. And such a lot, I think a company only works if you have a lot of them. That's the thrill of it. You've got 14 people who play loads of different parts over a season, and you get to know them, and they get to know you, and therefore, rehearsal rooms can be different and can be trusting and can be. You're a bit like a family, and you fall out and fall back in love, and all those kind of things. But I think having that bunch of people to work with was kind of life-changing, mixed with the repertoire. I think the thing about Dundee Rep was at that time, you sort of could do anything. It felt like we could do anything. I did Ubu, I did Midsummer Night's Dream, I did Macbeth, big classic plays, and a lot of them, all year round. And the company were everyone was kind of knackered, but but we were working really hard, and we were touring the work, and that was a very, very exciting time. But I think what also made that work interesting was because Dundee Rep had Scottish Dance Theatre based there, so I had a very good relationship with Janet Smith, who ran the dance company, and so Janet would be movement director on a lot of the work that I did. So just introducing that idea that how the body can help inform storytelling and that kind of thing, became important in terms of how I was looking at making theatre. And just having a dance company there, and you could see their work all the time, and we had lots of visiting dance companies coming into the theatre as well. So that sense of dance theatre, I think, was really inspiring at that time. I also worked with a brilliant composer, Paddy Kaneen, who was one of the founders of Cheap by Jowl, who I guess are another kind of big inspiration for me. And that, I suppose, it was with him we started introducing kind of live music in at the beginning. Just it was recorded music, but then when we did Peer Gynt, it was live. And then since moving on to that, I've worked a lot with a Macedonian composer, Nikola Kodabasia, and then working with him, all our music has been live and played by the actors. So it's sort of kind of evolved, I guess, through the years, and that's been because I've been lucky about where I've been. I don't think I'd have had the career I've had, but I don't think I've had the creative journey I'd had if I hadn't if actually I hadn't gone to Dundee, which certainly wasn't, I was meant to go there for a year. But actually, weirdly, that has sort of evolved over the years, and I think that's because of being up here. And also, I think that's something about specifically Scottish about Scottish storytelling, so that there is a sort of, I think, in the sense of companies like Communicado, which has also, I think, come out of 784, that kind of sense of storytelling being something that involves music, dance, a kind of communal experience feels like a very kind of Scottish thing to me. And Communicado were also a company I think that inspired me early on, and I think that kind of tradition has not deliberately but kind of informed my work. And maybe that's about an openness, actually. Maybe that's just about going, why don't we do this in this scene? Why don't we, why don't you pick up that instrument and that? It feels like there aren't rules you need to adhere to. I feel there's a sort of an easiness and an openness that you get with Scottish theatre makers, and I think that has allowed my practice to develop.
Yeah, this is one of the things that people argue about Scottish theatre. They say that it doesn't have as strong a playwriting culture as England does. It doesn't. There is no Scottish Shakespeare. But Scottish theatre has its roots in the variety tradition and in Glasgow Unity Theatre, which, interestingly, obviously James Bridie, founding director of the Citizens Theatre, was slightly in opposition to. And I do think a lot of directors cite that as something that they love about Scottish theatre. Is that what a lot of directors come and work in Scottish theatre, they run an organisation and then they leave again. You haven't, you've stayed and made your career within organisations in Scotland. I suppose you arrived at a time when the National Theatre of Scotland was just being founded. There was a bit more money flowing around. It must have felt like an extremely exciting time to arrive. It feels like you're a good fit for this theatrical sensibility that you've just been discussing. Is that why you have chosen to build your career here?
Yeah, I think creatively it has been good to me, and hopefully I've been good to it. Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that on the whole it's a kind of supportive community because it's small, it's Scottish theatre as a whole feels smaller than London theatre. Do you know what I mean? That there is a we all know each other. I'm not saying we all necessarily always get on, but I think there is a kind of sense of There is a sense, I think, of kind of close-knitness, maybe too close sometimes, but I feel like there's a kind of accessibility to our fellow theatre makers in whatever form that feels harder outside of Scotland. It feels harder in London, and you know there are disadvantages to that too, in that because it is a small pond and you sort of know everybody who's in it, and sometimes you long for difference and different kind of influences. But I think also that there is a, I think that kind of closeness is it affects sort of all aspects of it, you know, even down to your relationship with funding bodies and Arts Council, you know, in that sense that you can email Creative Scotland, you can email the head of drama, and do you know what I mean, in a way, and expect a reply in a kind of personal way that isn't the same when you've got a much bigger kind of infrastructure to deal with. So I think at its best, its smallness is a great strength.
Do you think Scottish theatre is at its best at the moment? How does it compare to your previous experiences of it?
I think we've been slow to recover from the pandemic, and I think the financial situation of the last few years has been really crippling in a sense of uncertainty. But I feel optimistic. I feel really optimistic that change is coming, and I think that there is a newfound kind of ambition and outward lookingness and an openness that's coming around the corner, and I think that there's sort of new, you know, new blood, as it were. I think James coming into the Lyceum is going to be great. I think Alan at Pitlochry will absolutely inject the sense of new. You know, Andrew's obviously hugely ambitious at Dundee to make that place as kind of important as possible. I think Jemima at the Tron, giving that place a new lease of life. The Sits reopening. I
Brian at A
feel
Play of Pie
like
and a
they're
Pint.
absolutely brown at paper. So I feel, yeah, I feel really hopeful that actually it's gonna take off.
Everything's going to be okay, as it says on the screen, the modern art gallery here in Edinburgh. On your Wikipedia, it says born Wimbledon 1969. Is that true? I have to check these things. Wikipedia is not always right.
Don't know who writes that. I didn't write that. That is correct, yes.
And then you went to, well, you tell me, when did you first experience theatre? When did you first fall in love with theatre?
So when I was a kid, I wanted to be an actor. In fact, I wanted to be an actor. You know, I went to university intending to be an actor, and I had been kind of obsessed with theatre. Yes, I don't know. I don't know why, but from about the age of, I suppose, about 10 or something, we moved out of London, and I used to save up my money and go on a bus to London to see as many shows as I could. So I was a sort of real theatre nut as a teenager. And when I went to university, I did quite a lot of student drama,
You were at
including quite a lot.
Oxford.
Indeed, I was. But I also started directing then, and I always knew I wasn't a very good actor, basically. I always knew that. So I thought maybe I'm a bit better at this. So that's sort of how I sort of embarked on that career.
How did you take your first steps in the industry? The internet has a little bit of a black hole in between your education and your arrival in Scotland.
So I left university. I went to work in a cheese shop, and I was writing hundreds and hundreds of letters. And then I got a phone call from Sam Walters at the Orange Tree in Richmond, and he said, "Did I want to come and assist? Well, meet him." And then, which I did. And then I worked as his assistant at the Orange Tree in Richmond. And I guess that sort of really was the sort of beginning there, because I stayed there for many years as his assistant, and then
This
also,
would have been when the Orange Tree was above a pub rather than in a lovely
no, this
theatre
was the
lounge, is
new,
it?
no,
This
this
was the
was the
new
new,
theatre.
this was the new theatre. But we ran the old theatre as a kind of studio space for about, certainly for a few years, and that was a kind of amazing time, because there was sort of a bunch of us there, and they were James Brining, Rachel Kavanagh, who's big director now, Sean Holmes, who's now at the Globe, Tim Sheeder, who runs the Don Mar.
A who's who of powerful industry
Was
figures
just,
these
it was
days.
just, yeah, it was, it was Interesting how we were all just there. I don't know, one of those things that happened. I think Sam at that time was really open. Samuel Walters was very sort of open to nurturing younger generation and gave us opportunities, and none of us were paid, but we loved it, and it was our kind of lives really. And that yeah, so I stayed there for a while, and then I got on the Regional Theatre Young Directors Scheme
Huge
after my year.
engine of kind of
Yeah.
producing directors in this country. It's a kind of
And
line
that's,
on every influential director's CV somewhere.
yeah. And third time getting in, and I remember I was interviewed by Annie Castledine, who was a kind of an enormous influence and force. And that sent me to Perth Theatre in Scotland. And that wasn't at all where I wanted to go, but I did. And that was useful because Andrew McKinnon, who is artistic director there, was also very kind of open to give me opportunities. So, which is quite rare for the RTYDS, as you know, he gave me a main stage show in my first year there as an assistant. And a lot of assistants have just sort of sat in the corner and watched. But he gave me a show, and that was the first time I'd done anything like that before. Dangerous Corner by J.B. Priestley, great play, with Irene McDougall as the lead. And I did a couple of shows. I did a couple of shows at Perth, but actually it was sort of through those relationships that I made at Perth in that time. And I must have been what, so it was 1994, so I was 25. Actually, that's how I ended up at Dundee, because Irene ended up in the rep company at Dundee in 2000, and then she suggested me to Hamish. I went and did a production of Winter's Tale as a freelancer, and then that's how I ended up in Scotland. So yeah.
You've spoken about your time at Dundee already. We haven't mentioned your time at the Travis, where you were artistic director between 2008 and 2011, I
Yeah.
think. Was that a good fit for you? Why were you only there for such a comparatively short period of time?
It was a difficult time. We the Travis had, as I think is often the way, a lot of financial problems. It felt, when I look back at that time, it feels like it was a struggle, really. There was a lot impacting on the Travis that was not helpful, not least that the whole of that area was a building site. You couldn't even get to the Travis. You were walking across wooden boards on concrete, or on beds of concrete. It felt like there was a lot conspiring against us. So it was difficult. I mean, I had some great times there, and I forged some great working relationships. Zinnia Harris, Linda McLean, Douglas, so Chris Hannan, all that, David Gregg, really. So all that came from the Travis. But it was, yeah, it felt like a chronically underfunded organisation then, probably as it still does. It was also the National Theatre of Scotland had just opened, and I think that there was a we were trying to find where we fitted in terms of the kind of ecology of Scottish theatre. And that was very much a new NTS then was very much a new writing organisation. So yeah, I had a good time, but the Sits was the theatre that I had always loved. From the first time I went into the Sits, that felt like the right fit to me. So when that came up, that felt like I needed to. That was the move I needed to make.
And it still feels like the right fit today. It sounds like it does.
I think so, yeah. Let's see in a year's time.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, I think we can go there. Thank you very much for chatting, Dominic.
Cheers, folks.
Theatre Voice is an archive of recorded interviews with theatre and performance practitioners. It's held in the V&A's Theatre and Performance Archives, the UK's national collection of performing arts, which are available to consult in the V&A's study rooms.